Welcome once again to America's Most Haunted Radio. Holy cow, did we have an amazing talk last night with Devin Marble. Please go check that show out if you have not done so. It was a special Monday night session, and of course today is a special Tuesday afternoon session. Yeah, we had a great talk with Devin. He gave us some sneak preview info about tonight's finale, season finale of Haunted Highway on Sci-Fi. And speaking of Sci-Fi, today we are previewing Paranormal Witness, which returns to the air tomorrow night. Very, very exciting. I am totally charged about that. And I believe we have our Paranormal Witness friends, Mark Lewis and Jason. Wait, where's Jason's name? I've lost it. My brain is fried. Haxton, I believe we have them right here on the air. Are you there, guys? Hello? Hello? Have I brought you in successfully? Well, I don't know. They may have to call back, so I'm not getting them through. It may be the patching isn't working. Not sure. Maybe you guys should hang up and call back if you can hear me. Anyway, returning tomorrow night is the show many have called the most frightening on television. And I have to admit, of all the shows that do recreations, this one is really the most stunning and startling and realistic. Very excited about it. We will be talking with producer Mark Lewis, who oversees the production of the show. And again, it returns tomorrow night. Very excited about seeing that. Lewis joined London-based Raw TV 3 years ago to direct two action drama documentaries, The Real Goodfellas, which appeared on Raw TV's Locked Up Abroad, and Somali Pirate for Discovery. So he has been around. I think that that attention to detail and reality really shows in Paranormal Witness. Also, we'll be having one of the witnesses, maybe the most famous witness, quote-unquote, not tomorrow's episode, but coming up this season, and that one's all about the famed Dybbuk box, and Jason Haxton is now the owner of that box, and he's also the director of the Museum of Osteopathic Medicine in Kirksville, Missouri. Holy cow. All right, do we have you guys on yet?
I'm here, Mark.
Excellent. I am so happy and pleased. I'm always happy when the technology works.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It really is. Now, you're calling from England, right?
Yes, I'm calling in from London. I'm based with Raw Television, the London-based production company who make Paranormal Witness. So, yeah, joining you from London, from the Olympics.
So how are those Olympics going?
They are so excited. We are on our way up the ladder trying to catch up with you guys, actually, for Olympic golds. We're a little way behind, but we're sure to catch up on the next few days, I'm sure.
Well, you have certainly made a run. I know those first several days, everyone was all getting very antsy because you didn't have any, no goals yet for Great Britain. But, yeah, the bike, the track bike you're great on, rowing. Yeah, you guys have really, really come on. They say the host country gets about a 50%.
As well.
Excuse me?
Don't forget our princess. We're good on equestrian as well. We've got our Princess Zara as well.
Absolutely. We have no princesses here. So, you know, we are envious. Let alone athletic princesses. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, we're very, very blessed.
And you got some track and field princesses, too, now that I think of it. Yeah, we're crazy Olympic buffs. In fact, my dad is there. He's there attending the games. We were planning to go, but it just got too complicated. We still have young kids, and it is a major endeavor to get over there and get everything set up, as you know. But, yeah, congrats on great, great, excellent games. I think it's going extraordinarily well. So do we have Jason on, too, or is it just Mark right now?
No, you got me too, Eric. I'm down here in the state capital of Missouri in Jefferson City, working on some museum business, and Happy to be on the show. I'll give you fair warning. A few days ago, we did a show similar. The producer of the talk show ended up getting hives, welts, blisters on his hands and feet, had to go home. The camera crew, they were videotaping it, ended up with severe burns down their neck and back. The complete security system went out, and the police were up there trying to figure out, it's a 20-story building, what they were doing. The air conditioner was on, but the room kept rising in temperature. And in the end, it was just absolutely chaotic. So I'm hoping for a quieter interview today.
Good God, man. Well, that was in person, I assume, right?
Actually, we had the first owner, Kevin Manis, who bought it, the box, as kind of an artifact, just as an antique for his mother. He actually took a Dybbuk box there and opened it. So I do have to say there was a difference.
Yeah.
There was one on set, and he did open it.
This is one time I'm happy to have the technological buffer, shall we say.
Okay, we got great distance.
Yeah, we have some separation, as they say in Olympic talk. All right, well, why don't we start with you, Mark? What a great show. Was this your idea? Did you conceive of it? I'll tell you what, my wife, who's pretty jaded by now, basically every episode last year, she was cowering under the covers and saying, I will not watch that show again. But she was back every week.
Well, I'm really glad we've got a fan in your wife. And what I would say is, you know, this if she was scared last time round in the first season, I can absolutely guarantee that she's going to be hiding under the covers for the second season, because it's been absolutely our aspiration to completely raise the bar this time. And I'm feeling very, very confident. The shows that we've got on in this season, it's double the number of episodes this time around. We had 6 episodes in the first season. This time around, we've got 12. And they really are absolutely extraordinary stories, truly terrifying. I've been there at the I've done many of the interviews, about 3/4 of the interviews across both seasons. I've been there for every script, for every shoot, and every edit. I know when every scare is coming, and I'm still jumping out of my wits, so that's got to be a good sign.
Yeah, that is a pretty good sign. Hey, one of the things I think is really great about the show, I have to admit, I'm typically pretty skeptical about recreations or dramatizations just because, you know, it's not real. But with you guys, I mean, the production values seem so much higher. You seem to take particular care to get people who actually look like the people involved. I'm always astounded when the people being recreated, you know, especially when they show them, all right, so you're seeing them in real life or in relatively real life, the real people, and then the people doing the dramatization, you know, they're like different gender, different nationality, they're upside down, you know, it's crazy. But with your show, I mean, it seems like the people really do look pretty similar. The acting seems to be a lot better. And as I say, the production values, you seem to have really taken a lot of care with that.
Absolutely. I mean, that is one of our highest priorities, actually. The series, you know, we really want the series to be as cinematic as it possibly can be. We're very aware from, you know, when the audience reaction to the first season was just astounding. I mean, I think we were overwhelmed by it. But, you know, the things that people really said about the first season were, one, that they loved the stories, that they loved the contributors, they loved the fact that these were real stories that had happened to real people. And the other thing that they were really drawn to was the high production value of the drama. We want this to be a very, very filmic experience. We want it to appeal to those who are interested in the paranormal world, of course. But also we want it to appeal to people who love thrillers, who love horrors, who love film going. So we want it to be a sort of cinematic experience. And we also want it to be as experiential as possible. We want you to feel like you're there, you know, on the ride with these witnesses of things, extraordinary stories that happen to ordinary people. We want people to experience it blow by blow, moment by moment, just as the real witnesses did. And therefore, it's really important that our drama marries up with the documentary component, with the interviews, with the witnesses. You know, if it jars, if the people feel too dissimilar, if the acting is a bit hokey, If any of those things happen and take you out of the moment, then the spell is broken. And we want you to be totally immersed in the experience of the paranormal witness. We want you to feel like you were there, because only if you feel like you're there, if you're experiencing it as they did, will you sort of come close to that sort of paranormal world, and will you really feel it just as they did? That's the aim of the game.
Amazing.
I want to chime in. This is Jason.
Yes, please do. I was just about to...
I shoot. And all the things that he's saying is he really let the people, and of course he went back and saw five of the people involved with the story, so everybody, all the details, and they truly let you tell what's happening. Not a lot of narration. So you're hearing it and you're seeing it. And I think that has a different element that you don't see in a lot of shows. And they truly step back and have you just tell the story. And they're perfectionists in the fact that you can go on, and we spend an entire day to get enough material, knowing that's going to be condensed down. I think it's going to be wonderful, because you'll get just really the best part of the story.
Well, why don't we back up a bit and talk about your episode. Now, when does yours air, Jason?
I'm not sure if Mark has that.
29th of August. The 29th of August is the Divot Box.
Well, that's kind of exciting, because there actually is a Hollywood movie that will come out on the 31st, so you get to see the real story, and then you can see how Hollywood can make it even more horrible. Though a lot of people are saying, you know what? Hollywood didn't do as good as the real story. That's freaky.
That is amazing timing. Well, let's back up even further, because while the Dybbuk Box is certainly quite famous, and I know you have a website, I know you've written a book about it, and we certainly want to mention all those things, but why don't you back us up to the beginning and maybe just give us the tale of how you came in contact with this box and what happened? Why is it so famous?
Well, Matt, the thing is, I'm not, no offense to the viewers or listeners, I'm not really a paranormal kind of person, which I think is part of what Mark looks for, is the people that really are kind of like innocent victims that have these incidents happen. I was minding my own business, taking care of our medical museum, our artifacts, and we hire college kids to do internships, get some job experience so they can be like us when they grow up. And this college kid who's an intern doing good work one day mentions, yeah, my roommate bought this haunted Jewish wine box. And, of course, we're like, what? It's a Dybbuk box. We didn't know what a Dybbuk was. I thought it was something with golf, you know. And he said, no, it's a Dybbuk, something Jewish. And it's like, okay, that's completely out of our realm. But I said, we'd be willing to see it because we love all history. Well, what ended up happening was this roommate ended up having problems, you know, losing his hair, shadowy figures, bug infestations. He had gotten it from a man who had bought it, an antique collector, and actually planned on giving it to his mother, which he did. And when she touched it, she had a stroke. They had these visions of hags beating them at night, breaking up with bruises, weird scents, smells, exploding lights wherever they went, strange occurrences. So you can see the history was, I said, well, I wouldn't mind seeing it at a distance just to satisfy my curiosity that it's a real thing. You know, you can tell when things are kind of cobbled together. And ended up happening is he said, well, you know, the only way to see it is to buy it. I wasn't going to buy it, but I had a friend who wanted to do kind of a haunted tour and said, well, I need that. And I said, well, I'll buy it for you, and then, you know, it's yours. Well, as soon as it was bought and things started getting freaky, he ran. And I was stuck now, ill, hives, breaking out, not able to, you know, choking constantly, lights. And flashes and strange things happening now at my house, exploding lights as you walk down the hall one after another. And again, not just going out, exploding. And it's like, ironically, when they were shooting the film, Ole Bernadal, who is the director, he said we would be under lights that were completely out, dark, and they would explode at us. And we, too, had drops in temperatures. We had these shadows that were not part of the filming that you might see. And it was freaking out the actors. He says that when the film was done and we were trying to, you know, just close it down, everything, the props, the replica box, everything spontaneously combusted. No explanation. So everything from the movie is gone.
Oh, my Lord. Well, this is amazing. When did all this start? When did you come in contact with the box?
I first heard about it in June of 2003 from the intern at the museum, Suzumate had bought it. And soon after, when it actually arrived to town, and I was making fun of it, this is why the term don't mock the box. I mean, we were just teasing him. After he showed us the listing and what it was and all about it, we were like, yeah, poo-poo it. And so it was like, you know, anytime something went wrong, it was like, oh, the divot box cost it. And it's a big joke. The day it arrived, a windstorm set up around my house and threw a 100-year-old tree into my home, just about destroyed it. And that was the only location of this storm. And wind is very common with a divot when they leave or when they arrive, huge blasts of air. And when I actually sealed it, which you'll see some of that in the filming that Mark did, there was a huge blast and an explosion of rainbow light, and I have no explanation for it. And I was in a dark, cramped area where there was no access to any additional air or wind. So it's weird. It truly is. I can't explain it.
It's amazing. It really is. And you said all these things just happened quite recently. So it sounds like the ceiling has not had the desired effect. Is that true? I mean, is this still ongoing?
To some degree, we've worked with scientists who claim there's an electromagnetic field, that the combination of the things inside the box and the wood itself is actually can cause, just like a nuclear waste, could actually cause illness and health problems and these weird things. This is the scientist's take. And so they claim that you have to put it in a storage box lined in gold to, basically short-circuit it, and you should be safer. The rabbis are like, no. You need to do it. This is a gift of God, and you need to treat it as a religious item. You put it in the rare wood of acacia, which is a very solid, like lead wood. You need to line it in gold because God thinks that this is a blessing and something man should never have had. And once you seal it in a tree, one single tree of this wood with the gold, it will calm down. But to some degree, they were actually saying the exact same thing, one for religion, one for science. And I said, you know what? We'll do what they both say. We created this acacia box in gold, and it has been calmer. But it now has this unusual scent. Almost an addictive odor that anyone who has smelled it, it makes you want to pull it from this sealed container, which is what I don't want to do.
Zowie. Well, you're a man essentially of science with the museum background and whatnot. I mean, what do you think it is?
Again, I'm not. I seriously have become more spiritual in the process of researching and understanding. Learning about the Hebrew language, because in itself it is a gift and magic and powerful to the people that are Jewish. And so the whole process has been just kind of wild, learning about Wiccan and paranormal and the Dybbuk itself. Gershon Winkler, the authority on Dybbuk, actually wrote a little blurb on my back and after my book. And after the radio show that where we destroyed the studio, he came home the next night and cleansed it. So it was kind of funny, really.
It's amazing. It really is. I mean, what does all this mean? The questions are endless. Back to you, Mark. So we are debuting season two tomorrow night. What is the first episode, and how did you select that story?
Okay, well, yes, you're right. The season premieres tomorrow night, Wednesday evening. The first episode that we've got, the premiere episode that we've got, is Man in the Attic. It's a relatively famous case, this one. It's the story of a woman called Jackie Hernandez, who had a young son and was pregnant at the time. She'd recently separated from her husband and moved into a home in San Pedro, California.
My hometown!
Sorry?
That's my hometown. I was born in San
Really?
Pedro, California.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, you'll know it well. She moved into to a home in San Pedro and very soon learned that she was actually sharing the home with someone else, that there was – initially she starts hearing sounds, high-pitched screeches coming from the roof above her head, and occasionally what sounded like the sound of pebbles going down in between the wall cavities. Then pictures would fly across walls, and she would find the nails perfectly upright on the kitchen table. All manner of things start happening before she starts seeing who is haunting her, and she soon realizes that she's actually sharing this home with the man in the attic, the man who lives upstairs, this sort of rather evil old man who just wants her out of the home, and that's the that's off from the starting blocks. That's the story, a story of a woman who battles to live in her own home with a man who is desperate to push her out. It's a truly terrifying story. As I say, you know, I've done lots of the interviews for this series, and when I watch the edits of these films, I mean, it really, you know, most of, I'm surprised myself at how often I'll jump at these films. This one is a truly terrifying film that will really, really have people on the edge of their seats.
Well, my goodness, I hope there's a happy ending in San Pedro, California.
Well, you'll have to watch Eric to find out. I'm not going to give away any more.
I guess I will. I assume this is an older house in San Pedro.
It wasn't that old, actually. I mean, I think that's one of the quite surprising things. You know, we've got 12 stories for this season. Several of them are kind of haunted stories. Our audience would write in. We were overwhelmed with the audience response for the first season, and a lot would write in just saying how much they enjoyed those kind of haunted stories. So, you know, we're really catering to those needs for this season, and there are a lot of those stories. Haunted house stories, but one of the things that interests me actually is that there doesn't seem to be any, you know, set formula to what type of house should get haunted, what age of house should get haunted. It's not always the old sort of Victorian numbers that you know, where you see the spirits. It can be a modern home, it can be an old home. You know, really, I mean, when you see all of these contributors their interviews back to back, you realise that, you know, you're not necessarily safe anywhere. Sorry, that's not good news, is it?
Wow, well, that's a cheery note, I must say. Well, kind of brought it up. How did you select the stories that you are, you know, what were your criteria for the stories that you are presenting this year? I know you have a Facebook page, and I'm looking at it right now.
On sci-fi.com, the sci-fi website, there's a paranormal witness page, and we now have a Tumblr site dedicated for people to share their stories and to submit their stories if they're interested in having their show featured. Having their story featured on the show. And, you know, we would really encourage people who've got really great stories to come forward. You know, we depend on people to come forward, and we depend on paranormal groups all across the country who've been a massive help to us in guiding us to, you know, the most exciting stories. But, you know, as Jason says, what's really interesting about Paranormal Witness, what sets it apart from other paranormal shows, is there is no commentary or narration in these stories. It's not like a documentary where someone says, and now Eric Olson walked up the stairs and encountered a ghost. That doesn't happen. It's just the paranormal witnesses telling their story blow by blow, moment by moment. So really, the story selection process is a pretty tough one. We've set the bar pretty high for ourselves. We have to find stories that not only kind of unravel and unfold like, you know, amazing ghost stories, but equally we have to find, you know, excellent contributors, ordinary people with extraordinary stories who are able, or hopefully we can help them, but who are able to tell their stories in an incredibly compelling way. And finding those contributors who not only have a great story to tell, you know, which unfolds wonderfully over a television hour, but also can tell it convincingly, and also are credible in themselves. You know, we are absolutely adamant that these stories should be as convincing as possible. We want our contributors, the contributors that we choose, to be credible interviewees. I think, you know, as soon as you kind of don't believe someone's stories, as soon as you don't engage with that story, then we've lost our audience. And I think, once again, you know, the reaction to the first season was, you know, we were really being applauded for finding stories, you know, that people believed. You know, even skeptics who would watch these shows would think, my goodness, I'm really convinced by that person. You know, they come across as incredibly genuine. I've seen them being incredibly emotional. I buy that one. And the more that happens, the more I think, you know, people who are interested in the paranormal, people who believe in it, will always believe in it. But, you know, I think we're also interested in attracting those of a more skeptical persuasion. And when a skeptic comes to watch this show and can be convinced by the likes of Jason or by the likes of Kevin Manis in The Dibbet Box or Jackie Hernandez, the protagonist of The Man in the Attic, the premiere episode, you know, then we've done our job. We're really wanting people to look at these stories and understand that these are not fictional. These are real stories that happen to real people. And if they can convince you, then, you know, my goodness, we're doing something very different here. We're introducing people to a paranormal world. And, you know, whether you initially start out, whether you believe it or not, you know, soon you sort of have to sort of confront it head on and decide whether you believe that story.
And Eric, let me chime in as one of the people, because we're just normal people and actually have a lot to lose and not gain by being on such a show. I mean, you know, if you're a professional, you'll find this is why often police or people that do witness things dare not say it, because, it, you know, this is my job. And if people think I'm crazy, and this certainly is a crazy situation, of what's going on around me, I don't want to lose my credibility to my community, my family, to where I work. And so there really isn't a lot to gain. You know, when you mention that a website, I've had hundreds of thousands of people seek me out. You can't reply to them. To me, the answer was, I'll just put everything up, my research, what I've discovered, the story, and then that way I don't have to be sending, and you can't send emails out. You're getting hundreds a day from people who are fascinated about what's happening. They all want to know the same thing. You know, is it true? What happened? Can you tell me something more? And so by putting it up on a website, that's how I was able to deal with it. And the book itself actually came out after a lot of all this was done, to some degree, to just wrap the experience up and be done with it. And I thought the best way is to tell everything from before I became involved all the way through to as much the end as possible, because these stories don't have happy endings. And what I discovered is they might just be kind of at a point of, this is kind of where I'm going to stop for now, because they don't resolve, you know, in an hour. So I do want to credit Mark for vetting stories that have, you know, again, it just can't be one person. In my story alone, there's five different people involved. The man who was first involved, and his mother who suffered horribly, the shopkeeper, the college kid that's a complete new part of the story, and then myself. So they really go to the extremes to bring it all together, that you see every bit of it, and as much of it is. And I think that's what makes it so compelling for people to watch this show. And so tomorrow, I mean, just hearing what he's been saying about the man in the attic, I don't know if I'm brave enough to turn that on. I might from under the covers peek out.
I'm wondering which of those scary faces in the promos is the guy in the attic. Is it the all-white one?
Is that, you know, that we approach it, you know, from quite a journalistic standpoint. When we try and find a cracking good story, yes, of course we want it to be entertaining. You know, it's television after all. But when we are searching out the interviewees, you know, not only are we searching out credible interviewees, but we're also looking for supporting evidence, whether it's photographs or real film footage or real, you know, news archive that can support someone's story, or real audio recordings or whatever it may be, so kind of supporting evidence which can help convince people of someone's story. And then, of course, the other thing that we do, as with Jason's story, The Dibbet Box, is, you know, there is a classic example of a story that becomes increasingly compelling because there are so many witnesses who corroborate the same story. The Dibbet Box is the story of a cursed Jewish wine box that is bought initially by an antiques dealer in Portland, Oregon, and then is passed from one owner to another owner to another, and each of them suffers, you know, misfortune. And there are several sort of types of shared misfortune. They all have these sort of horrific dreams of mad hags who beat them. You know, those kind of details are what help corroborate the story. And what you're left with is, when you watch this film, you think, my goodness, yeah, this feels true. This feels real. This happened to so many people. And each time I hear a successive voice backing up the last, then I'm more inclined to believe. So, you know, I think that we approach the stories very, very journalistically. And, you know, with something like The Dibbet Box, we were very thankful with that story. You know, and with the participation of Jason Haxton and Kevin Manis, the original owner, and his mother, and Brian, the second owner of the box, you know, all of those people went to corroborate an extraordinary story. When you start out and you see this story, you think, my goodness, you know, I can't possibly believe that one. By the time you've heard so many voices all saying the same thing, all saying they suffered a similar misfortune, then you just become increasingly convinced.
And the thing about this, Mark, I want to add on, I didn't want to believe there was something attached to this wooden wine cabinet, though it is in the shape of a prayer box and has these strange granite pieces and hairs and pennies and strange, cups. What I thought was somebody has poisoned this thing. We're all having hallucinations because of arsenic or cyanide or ammonia poisoning. These can create choking, hives, hallucinations. But as a museum person, I had access to think, oh, my gosh, we've been poisoned. I had it thoroughly checked with heavy metal chemical testing. We do this every day because we get artifacts that are coated in mercury. And you know, there's very many dangerous things out there that are old, but it's very scientific. But when we couldn't find anything on the box that would give a reason that all these different owners would have these similar and yet somewhat different experiences with it of health problems and things they're seeing, I had to finally say, my gosh, there might be something truly attached, which is the last thing I wanted to believe. But that's all in the stories, telling what we've been through with it.
So let's take this a step further. Jason, yeah, obviously your specific episode, your tale, Mark, with the more panoramic view of the series. What are the implications of these stories, and in particular your story, Jason? How has your worldview, your basic view of how the universe works, how has that changed as a result of your particular story and Mark, these collections of stories? Now you've done 18 stories. How has your worldview changed?
Well, I'm more spiritual because of, what I'm saying is I went very scientifically. I mean, we deal with history, which is facts based on, the material you have. We deal with real things and try to find their stories. And so it's a very solid, very scientific approach, to public trust with sharing stories about who they are. I mean, that's what I deal with every day. In this case, it didn't match anything that was going on, and so I had to really look inside of myself, and it really, I think, made me believe that there is something more. And so I think it wasn't, in this case, not a bad thing, though I kind of suffered, and those in my family did too. In the end, I think it made me a stronger person for understanding that we're not just a physical pile of flesh, that when we die, that's it. There is actually a plan, and there is more. That's what I have to say. Mark, I don't know, what's your take?
Well, I have to be honest. When I started on Paranormal Witness nearly 2 years ago, I was an extremely skeptical person. Didn't believe in ghosts, didn't believe in UFOs, didn't believe in any of those things. I guess what I was attracted to were the terrific stories, were storytelling. But I've now conducted something like, I think we've probably done about 100 interviews for the two seasons of Paranormal Witness now, and I've conducted about 65, 70 of them, and if you're sat just a few feet across from, as compelling, convincing interviewees as Jason or the many others who are in Paranormal Witness, you can't possibly not, I defy anybody really not to, change your view, to change your belief system. You know, when I sit across from these people and stare them in the eye, I can tell that they're telling the truth, that these people, believe honestly that these things happen to them, that they are describing real events that truly happen to them. And when that happens to you as an interviewer, when you're sat across that number of people, you can't help but question your own belief system. You can't help but wonder, what the heck is really going on out there. I mean, as I say, I've interviewed 70 people. They can't all be wrong. I think slowly but surely, skeptical old me has become, more and more convinced that there is something out there, something that's unexplainable. I think that's what the series, at the heart of the series, that's what it's all about. We want to introduce these stories, extraordinary stories of ordinary people, is how we always describe it, to a broader audience. Let them make up their own mind. But I'm pretty confident that the stories that we're showing, that the contributors that we have got on the show, are the most compelling and most convincing contributors that we can possibly find.
So let's take that a step further. If the preponderance of all this evidence and the fact that you have spoken to something like 100 people and most or all of them seem quite convincing, they are honest as far as you can tell, and their stories are logical and verified. I know one of your criteria for the shows is you aren't just looking for single person tales. You're looking for kind of group related stories so that you can come up with some verification. I think that was a great way to go about it, and that was very smart of you. But assuming then that there is something to some aspect of this, what does that mean for you personally? I mean, I know you've said it has changed your perspective, but how has it changed your perspective?
Well, I think it just makes you question everything. It means that you don't accept things on face value anymore. You're not, you know, as immediately dismissive as you might have been in the past. You can't possibly be. I mean, interestingly, we've got another episode coming further down the line, which is possibly, well, I would say it is, the most famous alien abduction story in history. It's the story of Travis Walton, a logger who was working in the forest of Arizona with a team of co-workers, and who, so he claims, was abducted by a UFO and was on board a spacecraft for 5 days. It seems extraordinary. It seems unbelievable on face value. But the difference with this story is that it was witnessed by six other people. All of the witnesses to that story are on our episode of Travis Walton, and the sheriff, and the deputy sheriff, and the polygraph tester, the guy who tested all of those, and he tested all of the loggers who had witnessed the UFO, and all of them passed. And he tested Travis Walton later on, and he passed the test. So we've got a story there which, you know, on face value seems completely unbelievable. But you watch these guys, you watch their testimony, you watch dramatized, you know, word for word, what they describe. And once again, you know, I think people really will be convinced by this. This is it's a film of which I'm very proud, directed by a superb director called Steve Kemp. It's a film which, you know, looks a bit like, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind or something like that in that ilk. But intercut with it is the testimony of these extraordinary now older men who tell the story of what happened in 30 years. They break down in tears because they were so traumatized by the events. They have been scarred by the events that happened 30 years ago. And all of them, over these 30 years, have stuck resolutely by their story of what they saw. All of them have passed polygraph tests. So, you know, there we've got a story which, you know, really seems, so on the face of it, completely extraordinary. But watch this film, and I guarantee you will be convinced. You know, I watch it, and I remember sitting across the seat from my executive producer and saying, "They're telling the truth, aren't they?" That's what I said to him. They're telling the truth. So, you know, even someone like myself who starts out suddenly on UFO stories, I think I've been very skeptical in the past. And here I'm now confronted with a story which really challenges your belief system. I mean, I'd really, really say people should watch this and watch it with an open mind, because it's an incredibly convincing tale.
Well, and something I've done since Mark has done the interview with me, which, because, again, people are like, well, okay, how can, you know, it's always proved. These things are so difficult to prove. However, we had someone come who, Lori Campbell from Orange County, California. She is really one of the best noted psychics for investigating murders and locating people that are missing, and has a reputation of being able to find and convict and locate missing murder victims and stuff, probably one of the better known. Actually taught at one of the universities in Arizona the whole idea of how science and psychic works, because she is probably one of the best mediums. She has her reputation on the line. She came out on a cold reading, didn't know what she was going to see, and nailed exactly what the Dybbuk box is, how it works, and as she said, probably one of the most interesting artifacts that she has ever had a reading on and spiritual guidance with. And again, I don't know what else I can do. I mean, I'm saying I even was willing to get it out just to show I have nothing to hide. Let the best look at it. And if they say, nothing here, just a wine box, fine. But what she says, oh, my gosh, this is an incredible power, and you probably are the perfect person to let it rest. You've figured out how to really take the best care of it, because it was in the possession of a person who wanted to have it buried with them because it was a very personal thing, this Vedic box. When it wasn't buried with her because of Orthodox burial rules of the rabbi, it was given away pretty much by the family, and it went on its own journey. She goes, that should have never happened, and at least it's now come to rest with someone who's going to respect it and care for it in a way. And that's why it's not on display. That's why it's not out there like a carnival show. I treat it very carefully and kind of am done with it in the sense of now just let it rest. But now what do you do with it? I mean, three things come up. People don't ever want to see it. People want to destroy it. Or people, for whatever weird reason, want to have it. And they're almost equal. You get, you know, nine people, and they'll almost be three, three, and three for what they want to do with it. And so that's where it's the true dilemma. It's just letting it rest, because when you don't know what to do with it, time will make the answer. And so it's calm, it's sealed. To me, there really isn't a resolution. It's just waiting.
Suspended animation on it, I guess, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at its worst, were you tempted ever to destroy it?
Oh, when I was ill, my instinct was to get it away. I mean, I moved it away from my home, but I didn't want it out of eyesight. So you'll hear in the story what I did with it and how I was able to give myself some distance, some space. But my fear was I knew enough about the college kids and the previous owner and even somewhat of the family, that none of them ever had resolution by getting rid of it. So as much problems health-wise and things that were happening around me, the phenomena, I knew to get rid of it was the last thing I would do. And if I got rid of it like everyone else, what if whatever's with it stays with you? But I also know the people that did move it on never moved away from the issues with it. So it really was, to me, a challenge to try to figure out what it's wanting. And if I could figure that out, maybe there would be some peace.
It's amazing. It really is. I wonder, does the religious side of it have meaning for you? In other words, this particular artifact would appear to have some sort of religious connection, to Judaism. There are many other artifacts that have some sort of apparently haunted element that are attached to other religions. Is this something that you, and this is of course just a pure opinion from you guys, do the religions play in this, have a role in this, or is there some sort of just kind of a common spirituality that just happens to have been channeled through one of these various religions?
Eric, I think you've nailed it, because I was raised Methodist, pretty bland Christianity, but and thought, really didn't really care much about the Jewish faith and what happened during World War II. As I explored this, what I really came to the understanding is, working with different people, whether they're Amish or Mormon or Muslim, really it's the spirituality, to some degree the compartmentalization of religion, I think keeps us from really truly seeing what we do all have in common, which we are all spiritual. And that's what I think all of these stories are about, is that core of true spirituality that every human comes with. Whether they're religious or not, it is there. And so that's what I'm saying, is I think it's beyond organized religion. I truly think that my growth and experience was spiritual, regardless of my upbringing, because I learned to see things differently through the eyes of, in this case, the Jewish faith, but also those that were practicing Wiccan, always thinking, oh, my gosh, those kooks, but actually seeing the care and what they're really trying to do in working with people and helping. And it's like, not as crazy as I might have thought based on my upbringing. So I think it was really expanding spiritually for me. And these are spiritual stories.
Any thoughts on that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, again, looking across the shows that we've got, you know, I by no means would I say that all the witnesses, the whose testimonies we feature in the show, are religious or started out religious. I think many of them have undergone a bit of a religious kind of sort of revival or revolution, just, you know, purely by having been through the traumatic events that they have. But, you know, by no means are there sort of golden rules on this. I don't think everybody that we've featured, you know, is necessarily sort of, you know, extremely Christian or extremely Jewish or whatever it may be. You know, what I think you do see in the show is such a variety of people from all backgrounds, from all classes, from all colors, from all, you know, all states of America, you know, and they are all experiencing, you know, similarly paranormal things. So there are no kind of golden rules about this. But I think Jason's right that, you know, if you do go through paranormal events, something, you know, the misfortune that has been brought about by the Dibbet box or a haunting, I mean, like, you definitely begin to raise questions about faith and spirituality, because you begin to feel that there may be evil in the world, and therefore I presume that you sort of therefore want to believe in good and want to believe in God or whatever it may be, because that will help you deal with, you know, the disturbing things that are out there. I guess that's how it plays out for a lot of people.
Well, sure, it's the yin and the yang. It's that balance. Yeah. If there's evil, you certainly would like to think that it is not the be-all and end-all, certainly.
Yeah. That's absolutely right.
Very interesting. Well, it sounds like both of you, kind of through quite different routes, have really undergone a lot of very important things, important changes to your lives and the way you view things and your world views. And gosh, you know, as far as Mark, for you kind of coming at it from the pop culture or even entertainment, I suppose, if you want to use a slightly more trivializing word, you know, that's pretty amazing to be transformed by your art.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, I started, you know, I'm a journalist by background. You know, as you said in your intro, I was making, you know, films about Somali pirate attacks and mobsters before I started working on Paranormal Witness. I think, you know, if I'm really honest, what attracted me to the series in the first place, or the idea of doing the series, was because the stories are just so extraordinary. They're so, you know, riveting. You know, nothing is better than a kind of good, you know, a good ghost story if told well. I think that pure and simple, that's what attracted me to it in the first place. But, you know, I think what you by watching Paranormal Witness, you'll realize that there's far more going on than just entertainment, than just a riveting good story. It definitely raises question about faith and spirituality and good and evil and, you know, what's really out there. Absolutely, for sure.
And for me, I'm looking at it, and you raised the point, it's a journey, and that's why I've come to meet people like you and like Mark, who, you know, would not have, none of this would have happened, people that have offered their knowledge, their help, or even just their support. It makes it all, I think, a little easier, because you realize the innate goodness in people, and that as people struggle, for me, constantly, through my 8 years with this thing, I have seen more good come from people than whatever evil or bad might have been attributed to this Dybbuk box. And so in some ways, it is the yin and yang. The good and the bad are part of this journey, and that's what makes it experience, that grows you as a person. So I wouldn't change it. I'm not saying it was always pleasant, but like anything, would you really want to be different than you are today? Because you have the power to change because of what you now know. So I don't see it as all bad. I think it is, again, just part of the process. And so thanks for giving me the chance to visit with you and reconnect with my friend Mark, because we have become friends. When you share this kind of story and you have someone truly interested in you, you can't help but become friends out of it.
Well, that's quite wonderful, and it sounds very and feels very genuine. As you were just saying, I think I don't think it's coincidental that kind of any specific worldview that you may have as far as regarding spirituality, as far as regarding the paranormal. I'm not aware of any perspective that does not attribute power, additional power, to people working together and people channeling their combined resources, their combined, whatever term you want to put on it, souls, into dealing with something. And, I don't think it's coincidental that every worldview that I'm aware of sees power in people working together.
Oh, absolutely. The community and people who want to, again, share their life experience, because this really is a journey where we're all kind of on the same ship and we need to take care of our space and take care of those around us. That's something that's very Jewish that I did pick up. And I like I said, it's like it certainly makes sense with my world sense. And so I appreciate, like I said, you and you're trying to work to help people have access to some good information and then make their own judgment on it. Does this work for me? Does this not work for me? And that's what I think the beauty of this kind of a show. At the end, it's up to you of how you use the information that you're going to be given.
Well, I'll tell you what. I am primed and pumped for Wednesday nights at 10, starting tomorrow night on Sci-Fi, of course. It's 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific and 9 Central, and we will have this season 12 full weeks, 12 full episodes of Paranormal Witness. So obviously that is a sign of great success, as the first season only had 6. And why don't we give any other further information? There's an excellent site for Paranormal Witness on sci-fi.com. It's sci-fi.com/paranormalwitness. There is also a Facebook page, and I'm looking at that as well. Similarly, it's facebook.com/paranormalwitness. Jason, why don't we give your various information? You have a book. You have this.
Yeah, well, again, you can find it all. It's very easy because it's the website, again, was to help people see my research, see the original auction, see how the story unfolded. So it is all there at www.dibbukbox.com. So dibbukbox.com. That will take you to, there's an opportunity if you want to buy the book and know the entire story, which Mark has done a good job. Like I said, probably book sales will wane because you're going to get a lot of the story in 1 hour, which is amazing. But that's where you can find the book. That's where you can actually, if you don't want to buy the book, just look at what I found out and where I've kind of grown spiritually by reading different things and finding out things. So www.dibbukbox.com, and I think we'll give it all to you.
Oh, I bet it will spur interest in the book. A well done. I see the various media as reinforcing each other because they're so different. You know, a reading experience is obviously very different from a film or a one-hour television presentation, which sounds quite cinematic, by the way. That's, again, something else that's really great about the show is it is so cinematic. And so that's amazing. Anything else you guys would like to mention in terms of the show or what to look out for or any other references here? We want to make sure everyone has all the resources that they need to get at the full experience.
I just want to add one thing, Eric. Misery loves company, so you can bet I'm going to watch all 12 shows and
that's fantastic.
I think, well, maybe my issue isn't as bad if I see that man in the attic. I think I'd rather just deal with the Divic Box.
At least it's contained, I suppose,
people
right?
People tune in. I think the stories that we've got this time around are bigger and better than last time. Have a look on the sci-fi.com website. You'll see there are some sneak previews and some trailers of the forthcoming shows. And if you regularly hook into that website, I know there will be more sneak previews and more trailers coming on through this season's run. They are truly great shows this time. I'm really, really proud of them.
Fantastic. Well, I've enjoyed very much. Time sure went quickly. You know, you never... you're never sure how interviews are going to go, but man, the time has really flown, and I think you guys both did a really excellent job of piquing our interest, and it was really great to have a kind of the micro view of a single episode and then the macro view talking about the series as a whole. So thank you both very much. Really enjoyed it. I am absolutely primed. There is no remote possibility that I will miss a single episode. This has got me really, really charged up. Great job on the promos, too. Boy, I hear people talking, and I see tweets, and I see messages on Facebook and whatnot that, oh, my God, I am scared senseless by the promo. Some of those faces. Holy cow.
Yeah, I read some of the Twitter feeds, actually, which were saying this is one of those shows that you just can't watch on your own. I think somebody else wrote in, this is the one show that I'm really thankful that there are commercial breaks in the middle of it, because I desperately need a break from all the suspense. So that was praise indeed for us.
That is funny, isn't it? Think how the world, the media world, has switched around where now, what with the DVR and whatnot, where you do have the option of kind of basically missing the commercials, and here people are singing the praises of those breaks in order to get a little bit of respite.
A lot of design has gone into those breaks. Now that we know those commercial breaks are coming, we've been very crafty, actually, and we make sure that you get the shock of your lives before each break comes. So you've got to be glued to the TV to watch out for them. There'll be some real shocks for you.
Well, I have about zero doubt about that. So congrats in advance on what appears to be an amazing season. And Jason, thank you so much. Really enjoyed hearing about your experiences. And it is, I mean, it just kind of all this fills me with a sense of wonder. You know, what is going on out there? What are these things that are out there that we do not yet understand and perhaps never will understand? And I suppose that's a really key part of being human is to have that sense of wonder. And that may be something that a lot of us kind of lose in the modern world, the technological age. And I think maybe that's part of the popularity. We've seen such a resurgence in interest in spirituality and the paranormal over the last, say, 10 years or so. And that may be in response to how sterile, a large part of many of our lives are.
Well, we're more connected because of the Internet, and that's why I think more of this is got to Eric, thanks for having me on. Mark, it's good to hear you again. And when I'm in London, I'll look you up.
That sounds good, Jason. Lovely to hear from you again.
All right. Well, thanks so much, gentlemen. Really enjoyed it. Best of luck to both of you. Hope things go as well as possible. And I really appreciate the time and really have enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much.
It's been a blast. Thanks very much, Eric.
Okay. Hope to talk to you soon. Thank you. All right, friends. Well, that wraps up another episode of America's Most Haunted Radio. Don't forget, tonight, yet another episode. We are just cramming them in. We just really wanted to take advantage of these opportunities. We've had access to some really extraordinary people, and we very much wanted to take advantage of that. So we are doing not one, not two, but three shows this week. I'm going to take a bit of a break myself because I got to talk to Devin last night and, of course, just got through with Mark and Jason. But Teresa, who will be back from her trip to Waverly Hills by this evening, will be speaking with Shannon Lusk and Elliot LaChance on the regular time frame of America's Most Haunted Radio. That is 10 p.m. tonight, and that's our usual time frame, 10 p.m. on Tuesday, so really hope you'll check that show out. I know I will, but I got to give my voice a break. We had band practice last night, so I was screaming, yelling, and rocking out. And then we had the interview with Devin, and now the interview today. So I'm about ready to give my voice a bit of a rest. All right, we hope to see you and talk to you all quite soon. Please help spread the word about America's Most Haunted. Thanks, and have a great afternoon. Bye-bye.